Joining me in the studio now is Dr. Liam McGowan, who is the head of school at the Nursing and Human Sciences and associate professor for mental health practice at Dublin City University. Good morning, Dr. Liam. How are you?
Good morning, Carl. I'm good, thanks.
Thanks for joining me today. I know you're probably busy. And so I think first things first, what is psychosis?
Well, big question, or small question for something huge. I suppose one of the ways to explain it is where it's seen as an extraordinary experience, so outside of what most people would consider the normal experience. So that's kind of a big way of understanding it. Within the area of mental health, it's considered a symptom of mental illness. And then within wider society, it's that thing, that extraordinary experience that some people have. So, for example, a lot of people think about psychosis and it's when they hear voices, or when they get strange smells or strange sensations, or when they have thoughts in their head, or thoughts about the world that's very different than what most other people around them will think about. And it's, I suppose, from the wider understanding, it's something that people develop over time if they experience extreme stress, and in particular extreme trauma in childhood or later on in adolescence. So, for example, if I've experienced a lot of trauma as a child and that wasn't dealt with, or it was denied, or I wasn't able to resolve that trauma, at some stage, if I'm vulnerable to this thing called psychosis, I can develop psychosis later on. So for most people out there, when they think of psychosis, words such as schizophrenia come to mind, for example. Words such as psychotic come to mind. And in kind of medical terminology, that is, it's a symptom. It's this thing about my thoughts are disordered. I might hear voices. I might have strange beliefs that other people don't believe. However, within the wider understanding of it, most of these things like hearing voices are normal experiences under extreme stress. So in fact, it was a similar radio show like this in Holland in about kind of 20 years ago that people began to understand, when they had a call in about hearing voices, that actually a huge percentage of people in the normal population hear voices. And before that, people thought it was just people who were psychotic. So any one of us could be psychotic. And sometimes what makes us psychotic in terms of diagnosis psychotic is only if we end up going to mental health services and start describing what's going on for us. And then this gets something labelled as psychotic. If it doesn't get to mental health services, I might be going around thinking I'm just kind of a little bit strange. I have these voices that might be helpful, might not be helpful. And usually they're associated with some real events or some real things that happened in my life. And I mightn't even be aware that it's connected to some real things that happened in my life. Often what psychosis is, it's an exaggeration of maybe my normal personality. So say, for example, I might have a kind of a personality that's a bit, you know, I'm a bit kind of suspicious, I'm a bit kind of conspiracy, focusing conspiracies, etc. If I'm under extreme stress then, for example, or if I'm vulnerable to psychosis, what happens is that type of personality gets exaggerated. So I might get really paranoid. I might think that people are out to get me. I might get very, very suspicious and hypervigilant and be looking around, and maybe might not go outside of my house if this gets extremely stressful for me, because the ideas and the notions of suspiciousness and paranoia about other people come into the extreme when I'm under duress or when I'm under stress. More and more we're understanding psychosis outside of just a medical understanding, because in the medical understanding, for example, this condition called schizophrenia, some people feel that there's not much hope. And also, there's only about a third of people diagnosed with psychotic illnesses who find the diagnosis helpful in their lives, helpful in their recovery, helpful in trying to understand what's going on for them. Whereas another two-thirds of people, where they don't find the kind of label of psychosis helpful, what they really look for is to make sense of what's going on. So, for example, if I can make sense of voices that I'm hearing, if I can make sense of beliefs that I have that other people don't have, and if I can kind of tie them into something in relation to my life, then the more I can make sense and the more I can relate and have a relationship with those experiences, the less damaging, the less tormentful, the less I feel damaged by this thing called psychosis. So nowadays, more and more, what mental health professionals try and do is try and work with people who have maybe had a diagnosis of psychosis, or preferably not diagnosed yet, but have symptoms of psychosis, and try and help people make sense of their experiences.
And what would be, someone say, the early signs that someone might be developing psychosis?
Well, most people, early signs would be that they're having kind of strange experiences. They're not necessarily seeing it as hearing voices, but they're kind of getting ideas that are just kind of coming into their mind. They're beginning to maybe isolate themselves a little bit more than they would have done. They're beginning to kind of maybe separate from friends and family. They might begin to stop kind of eating normal food. They might begin to want to eat on their own. The sleep begins to go off. You know, all of these things can happen between 3 months and kind of 6 weeks and 4 weeks prior to maybe while they're getting a kind of a crisis, where it's beginning to cause so much kind of difficulty that they're unable to deal with it. That's in the main, but often there's ongoing life stresses that build up to that. For example, traumas that people might have had as a child, similar things are beginning to happen in their life. For example, people are making a transition from adolescence to adulthood. There's similar kind of changes happening in their life that might kind of trigger stress response, that then they're beginning to maybe get kind of psychotic-like experiences. So, for example, beginning to hear the voices. For example, beginning to, their thoughts are just getting a bit kind of fragmented, and they're not kind of clear, and they're not sure what's going on for themselves, with other people, and the relationships are getting strained. And sometimes the relationships feel stranger than they actually are. So there's some of the kind of early ideas of when somebody's beginning to develop what we might call psychosis.
How would they go, like, say they're going to the doctor about it, what type of signs would they mainly, like, try identifying the person?
Well, it's funny, if we go to the doctor, you might look for certain things. So it depends on who you go to within kind of mental health services or in the helping professions generally. So if I went to, for example, a psychiatrist usually interprets psychosis according to a set of criteria, which is kind of either, it's known as the DSM-5 criteria or the ICD-10 criteria. And it's kind of a classification system, which makes sense to psychiatrists and some professionals, but not necessarily to the person who's presenting with symptoms. So they'd ask a series of questions about, you know, how have they been feeling? Have they been feeling maybe low? Have they been feeling kind of agitated? Have the thoughts been racing? Have the thoughts been getting out of control? They'd ask them things like, have they been hearing voices? Have they been thinking things strange that other people mightn't also think? You know, there's a series of questions a psychiatrist might ask. But if you went to maybe a social worker or a mental health nurse or psychologist, they might ask a wider kind of area of questioning, because more and more of the professionals are working within a wider scope of understanding psychosis, which is more helpful towards recovery. So you might just start with asking what's been happening, what's been going on recently, what's been going on kind of in the more medium past. You know, is there anything that's going on for you now that you can kind of recognize that's linked to something that's been going on for you in the most recent past? You might ask, has your life stressors increased in the past while? Because there's two major ways of understanding psychosis, which is different than maybe the medical way. And one is it's related to the level of normal life stress I'm having and kind of life event stress I'm having. So you might be asking, have you had more life event stresses recently? It might be the anniversary of a loved one's death, for example. It might be lost a job. It might be lost a relationship. And that increases people's stress. And if they're vulnerable to kind of psychosis, like some people are vulnerable to psychosis, other people are vulnerable to skin conditions, to, you know, respiratory stuff. So if I'm vulnerable to psychosis, then if my stress is increased and I go above a certain threshold, then I might become psychotic. So I might ask questions around that as a mental health nurse or as a therapist to try and establish, has somebody gone over the threshold? And then if I can establish that with the person, then we can work on what their coping mechanisms are normally to bring them below the threshold, which will relieve the symptoms of psychosis, which means they'll be able to work kind of within managing their day-to-day life again.
And when it comes to treatment, it's obviously just not like here's a few tablets, take them, I'll see you in a month or time. What type of stuff would they normally deal with when they're going through a treatment?
Okay, so medication is one way, and you'll probably know from listening to some of your listeners and that they're fed up that that's sometimes the only thing they're offered. That doesn't, in fact, resolve psychosis. What it usually does is keeps a lid on it, which means the lid's going to come off at some stage. So one of the ways that we work is that idea of getting people to identify what resources they already have or what kind of resources they can work on to bring their stress levels down. So if I can bring my stress levels down, I reduce my symptoms of psychosis. If I reduce my symptoms of psychosis, then I'm able to interact more normally in every day with my friends, with my family, with my work environment, with education, with whatever I want to do. And that lessens the impact of the psychosis, which further reduces the symptoms. Because the more I can feel unstigmatized, the more I can feel normal, and the more I can relate to my fellow human beings, the less likely psychosis is going to cause me some serious distress. So that's one way, but working with somebody to identify. And this could be anything from relaxation techniques, from meditation, from kind of getting a work-life balance. What can I do in life that can actually reduce some of the symptoms of psychosis, so to bring my stress levels down? Sometimes it can be kind of ongoing counselling, ongoing talk therapy, to be able to work through what's going on in my life. And if I can work through what's going on in my life, then I can kind of work on how is psychosis affecting what's going on in my life. The other thing that you would work with people if you were trying to help them recover from psychosis, because what people don't necessarily realise is that psychosis is not a thing you have for life. Psychosis is something at different levels that can disappear just like that, if it's just drug-induced psychosis, for example. But even if it's a long-term psychotic condition, people can recover from it. So that's really important to know. The example I gave is one example of how people begin to manage their life. The other example is where, I think I was saying earlier, where you work with people to try and make senses of their experiences. And if I can make sense of my experience, so for example, if I hear voices and I can work with somebody who can help me make sense of those voices, it might be the voice of maybe a perpetrator, of somebody who maybe physically abused me in early life, then if I know that's where that voice is coming from, then I can actually work with that voice and I can focus on that voice and actually begin to negotiate with the voice, for example, for them to have their time and for me to have my time. And the more I can relate to and understand the voices, the less negative impact they have on my life and on my mind and on my kind of health. And the same for kind of beliefs, maybe paranoid beliefs, and maybe beliefs that are affecting my ability to kind of have normal relationships. If I can understand where they came from. So, for example, if I'm suspicious, if I'm paranoid, if I'm hypervigilant, and I can relate that to a traumatic background, so trauma in my kind of back life story, then I can understand why I'm paranoid, why I'm suspicious, and why I'm hypervigilant. And there's ways that you can work with this kind of trauma recycle that reduces them symptoms, reduces the paranoia, reduces suspiciousness. And some of that is like basic body work. You know, it's working with what we call somatic re-experiencing. So it's about relearning the body to deal with day-to-day trauma so that just doesn't keep triggering the original traumas that possibly led to psychosis in the first place. So for example, we now know for sure from all of the international evidence that 70% of people who are receiving mental health services with a diagnosis of psychosis, that this is more likely called dissociative psychosis, which is more about post-traumatic stress disorder than psychosis coming from some sort of strange place. So we know we can actually pin this dissociative psychosis, 70% of cases at least, on people's backstory. And if we can pin on people's backstory, then people are able to renegotiate how they live their lives with this thing called psychosis, because they now understand where it might have come from. So that's really, really important in terms of recovery from psychosis, because the medical diagnosis of psychosis doesn't often enable recovery. It's about maintenance rather than recovery.
And you were saying there a lot, obviously psychosis was triggered by a lot of different things that occur through someone's life. Is that always the case, or can there be some cases of it can just literally appear out of nowhere?
It's not always the case. We know from the evidence that in at least 70% of cases, that is the case. Now, the first thing to be clear is that's not necessarily helpful to the person with psychosis unless they have the opportunity to actually look back and to see is that the case. Because for most people, by the time they've developed psychosis, if it's related to trauma, that's how they've created some way of dealing with the traumatic events. So they may no longer relate their psychosis to childhood or adolescence trauma. So it's need to be clear that it's not necessarily a conscious given that that's the case. But back to your original question, no, that's not always the case. In some cases, for example, I mentioned drug-induced psychosis. You know, particularly some of the stronger drugs coming into the country over the last 10, 15 years, we see an increase in drug-induced psychosis because people were taking what they might consider crap drugs before, and now they're taking really, really strong drugs, and they're not used to taking strong drugs, and they're taking them from a young age. So we get more and more people who have drug-induced psychosis. The benefit of that is sometimes it can happen once and it won't happen again. But sometimes if it happens several times, that can kind of trigger the vulnerability to ongoing psychosis. There's other places where people can develop psychosis. They can develop psychosis kind of over kind of, I suppose, through family patterns. So it might suddenly just come through in a family pattern that wasn't there before. And it does come, not necessarily out of blue. It's very seldom, unless it's drug induced, that you'll see a psychosis coming out of the blue. But it's possible it can come and it's not linked directly to childhood or kind of ongoing trauma. But that would be the unusual rather than the norm. The norm would be there'd be some sort of trauma in people's lives. But what we can say definitively is that that trauma caused a psychosis. But there's a guaranteed relationship in the international evidence between that trauma and the development of psychosis.
Now, before we wrap it up, because unfortunately we are getting a bit too close to the end of it, this Friday, May 24th, World Psychosis Day.
Okay.
Can you tell us kind of just a quick little thing about it?
Well, I suppose not really, because from our point of view, every day is a psychosis day. Every day is a mental health day. And where I appreciate it's great to highlight stuff like this is fantastic highlighting this week. It's great highlighting kind of World Psychosis Day. But essentially, just like Mental Health Day on the 10th of October, it's about kind of asking people to just kind of recognize and to just spare a thought for the fact that this is something that happens. Kind of, if we say that one in every four people have mental health difficulties, there's far more than that in reality. And then of that, probably, you know, 1 to 2 to 3% of people kind of have some sort of psychotic kind of episode with that. It's to kind of spare a thought, but also to realize that psychosis is not across for life anymore where it used to be across for life, that nowadays psychosis is something we can engage with, we can make sense of, and we can recover from if that's what we choose to do.
And where would people be able to find out a bit more information online if they were looking for it?
I suppose like the standard place where people go for links is they might go to resources such as, you know, Mental Health Reform. They might go to resources such as Critical Voices Network, which gives an alternative view of psychosis. They might go to, for example, Hearing Voices Ireland is a place where people can go to kind of look at it, specifically about hearing voices, which is just part of the psychotic experience. Well, that's three particularly good examples that you'd be able to find out some information.
And unfortunately, I'll have to cut it there, Doctor.
Oh, cheers, Carl. Thanks
I
for having
really
me.
I really appreciate you coming in and talking to us about psychosis, as you know, it's something that does really need to be touched upon to get awareness out there for everyone. Not even those with it, just everyone in general.
Absolutely.
And we'd love to have you on again in the future at some point.
No worries. Happy to pop in.
Thanks very much for that.